The receding wash of a wave along the shore reveals words written into the sand. Big Beach. A cloudy sky turns from grey to gold behind the words Heyday Films. A ball of light explodes into the surrounding darkness and illuminates the words BBC Films. Stars and planets fall swiftly into alignment, by turns eclipsing, then briefly illuminating the words Odyssey Entertainment. A group of pensioners are seated around the Christmas dinner table. They're joined by Tanya, a care assistant who's wearing a sexy Santa outfit. Opposite her sits Steve, a middle-aged man with an unkempt moustache. Edward, a 10-year-old boy, sighs wearily at the foot of the table, and at the head is Kath.
I'd just like to say thank you all for being here for our first year. All of our lovely residents are all looking so smart, and for choosing us here at Lark Hall, and for having a bit of faith in us. And Merry Christmas.
Steve leers at Tanya from across the table as she adjusts her costume. Edward suddenly observes the pensioners eating. With an unsteady hand, the gentleman next to him raises a fork to his mouth. On Edward's other side, another gentleman unfurls a cracker joke.
When a man grows old and his balls grow cold and the tip of his prick turns blue...
Other residents look concerned.
It bends in the middle like a one-stringed fiddle. He can tell us a tale or two.
A disgruntled Lillian watches as another resident addresses Edward.
What did Father Christmas bring?
I don't believe in
it. He turns his head away.
I shan't see another Christmas behind you. If I was like her, I'd shove my head in a gas oven.
A befuddled woman plays with a cracker toy. The film, Is Anybody There?, is set in a residential home on the coast in the 1980s. Now upstairs, Arnold lies on his bed, face up to the heavens, gasping. Edward imitates the old man's strained breathing. Wide-eyed, the boy stares at Arnold's motionless face.
Mommy! Mom!
What?
He runs downstairs and throws the toilet door wide open.
Arnold's dead!
Two undertakers lower the old man, now wrapped in a body bag, downstairs. They're watched through the hand railing by Edward.
Try and be careful.
Mum supervises the undertakers.
Can I have my ring back now, Arnold's dead?
Get in there.
No. You're getting a sleeping bag when he's finished with it.
Can we have a bit of respect, please?
She points her hand sternly.
Don't go in that room, Eddie.
Edward ascends the stairs in the geriatric chairlift, his eyes fixed, single-mindedly on the bedroom door. Entering the room, he peers under the bed and retrieves an old tape recorder.
Not you bloody listening, Lyle, monkey.
I'm not daily shitting Thompson.
Hey, Father, keep your hair on.
The two undertakers lift the body from the bed. Edward pauses the tape recording and the undertakers freeze, then rewind. Now his mum, in a nurse's tunic, washes the corpse with Edward's dad.
I read it in the Daily Express. 90% of small businesses go down the tubes, apparently, in the first year.
I should stop you reading that paper.
Walking Scarborough hung himself in his sporting goods shop.
Yeah, but people don't need sporting goods. They're always going to get old, aren't they? It's just teething trouble, Steve. Kiss, kiss.
He rewinds the recording back further to a point where the old man is alive. Edward, now wandering along a country roadside on a crisp winter's day, plays the tape with headphones on. He steps off the pavement, causing a camper van to swerve and crash. An old man, his face contorted with rage, gets out.
Do you think you're playing it?
I could have killed you.
Edward hurries away.
Oi! Come here!
Emblazoned on the side of the van are the words, "The Amazing Clarence."
And on Boxing Day, we're tip-top a skipping windmill, and I got badge.
No, you got a badge.
A schoolroom.
Edward.
On Christmas Day, Arnold Doughty, 90, went blue and died. So far, there has been no communication from him.
Edward shows the class his diary, containing a pencil drawing of Arnold's ghost. Trudging home, Edward recognises Clarence's van pulled up beside their rambling front garden.
I think I made a mistake, all right?
Well, just give it a day, please.
No, I'm fine, thank you.
But we've just moved all that in.
Well, I'm moving it back out again, all right? It's my things, isn't it?
Who is he?
Some gargant old fart social services have sent. Lost his wife. Lives in a camper van, like Popeye.
Clarence! We can get your stuff just how you like. You can take as long as you want.
That's not a word.
Yes, it is. Taxi.
You're not playing properly.
Hey, gonna be your first day at school? Well, it's a bit like that, isn't it?
Yeah, it is a bit like that.
The first night's the worst, buddy.
Oh,
went as bad as her the first couple of nights.
Be quiet, otherwise the war will start again.
A lot of jabbering simpletons rushing about, wetting themselves. People you don't know telling you what to do. I'm off.
Hey.
She clasps his hand and their fingers interlock.
Just give it a go.
Clarence pauses and looks at her imploring eyes.
This is temporary.
His face quivers and he bites his lip, watched by Edward from the basement.
This is only temporary.
Why doesn't she let him go if he wants to go? She should do. Then I can move back into my old room.
Oh, you can move back into your old room if you can pay us 50 quid a week.
Edward is now watching TV in the communal lounge.
Haunted houses, ghost hunting, and the search for life after death. The most famous ghost hunters and their most famous cases. And we are...
Clarence changes the channel to one man and his dog as the care assistant comes in.
Lillian! Your daughter is on the phone.
Mavis? Is it now possible to record? Really?
The grey-haired old lady skips out to the hallway phone. Clarence and Edward fight over TV channels.
I wonder what you think of the chances of who's going to win. I wouldn't really like to predict that at all, Phil.
What do you want ringing wastefully from Canada, Mavis, when a stamp costs hardly nothing?
Mum fishes spoons out of Vina's apron.
I want to watch Arthur C. Clarke. Mum!
I've been meaning to ask what you want to do with those.
Well, Clarence wants to watch One Man and His Dog. He's the one who's paying. You're a naughty girl. It's about ghosts.
We're all naughty girls.
Oh, God, Barron.
I've been along with that one in a long, dark railway tunnel.
Can I get my wages, Kath? Oh, sorry. Oh, it's very important. It's about recording ghosts. There's a ghost hunter saying what he does when he wants to hunt them.
She counts out the petty cash.
Steve, come here.
Oh, no, I think what you want to say is, darling, would you mind coming here if you're not too busy?
That's what I said. Why can't you watch the TV upstairs?
No, you ordered me to come in there.
The TV upstairs is haunted. Why don't you do it then? Please, darling.
Because I came in there last time, dearest.
It doesn't matter. And you didn't come over here last time.
Yes, I did.
Why don't you listen? Sorry, love. Have you sorted out the TV for him? Nina, you've just pitched all these knives and forks again.
Yes, sir.
Steve fixes the aerial in Edward's room.
Arnold's ghost must have got into it when he died.
Arnold's ghost had better things to do than hanging around in a telly.
There.
Ghosts, yappy.
Thermometers. To detect sudden fluctuations in temperature, and strange as it might seem, one might consider bringing a dog or a cat, as animals seem to react to supernatural activity.
Edward is transfixed.
To provide much-needed company.
Bryce's methods were thorough and no nonsense.
Steve lingers by the window, watching Tanya greeting her boyfriend outside.
It was only a matter of time. What do you think happens when you die, Dad?
He catches his sagging figure reflected back in a mirror.
Can't imagine it's all that different.
Steve turns away from the window and slopes off downstairs as the young couple depart. Edward stares intently at the TV.
The entire building be cleared of inhabitants to allow the ghost hunter to work in controlled conditions and without interruptions.
Now, in his bedroom with the headphones on, Edward makes notes in a logbook. Leafing through the book, each entry states no recorded evidence. Turning towards the open bedroom door, he sees Clarence passing through the hallway. Edward stealthily approaches Clarence's room and observes the old man sinking down onto his bed. Clarence salivates onto his fingers and wipes off a note in biro on the back of his other hand. Go to purgatory. His eyes are downcast.
Bastards.
Clarence draws an old wedding photo out from his pocket.
Hello, Bridget.
He turns the photo in his hand and magics it into thin air. Then, with a flick, the photo reappears in his other hand. Edward watches on in astonishment, then approaches the doorway.
Are you a magician?
No. I'm a retired flasher.
This used to be my room, until Arnold came.
Who's he when he's at home?
He's not anybody now. He's dead. He died in that bed. If you see anything supernatural, do you think you can inform me?
Do you think you can bagger off?
Edward frowns, then leaves. The following day, Edward is kicking a ball against an outbuilding. The care home is surrounded by uncultivated farmland, and one of the residents is feeding some ducks. Nearby, Clarence throws out some unwanted possessions from the campervan. Finding a newspaper cutting, he pauses to examine the article. The headline of the yellowing page reads, Magic Duo Reach New Heights. Edward's football startles Clive, the resident.
What?
One out!
Give me my ball back.
Edward boots it into the camper van.
Whoa.
Seething, Clarence throws it back out again and Edward runs off.
Come here when I kick you. You think they sent me here to be abused?
Get stuffed!
Clarence turns back towards the van and Edward emerges from the shrubbery with a clod of soil in his hand. It strikes Clarence. Teary-eyed, Clarence turns back to face the boy. Now indoors, Edward ticks off his checklist. Talcum powder, thermometers, dog or cat. He frowns as the last item remains unticked. An empty house. Kath approaches her son's bedroom door.
Big hands at 6, little hands at 8, Eddie.
Edward is holding a flaming roll of paper to the smoke detector in his room. He struggles to extinguish the improvised torch. Going downstairs, he locks the front door on the residents who are assembling outside. His parents herd the bewildered residents together in the rain. Inside the home, Edward sets up the talcum powder trap, thermometer, and recording equipment. His mother returns, accompanied by two firemen, and discovers him.
False one.
They are real people, you know. They are not toys. They were little boys and girls as well once.
I don't want to live here. I want things to be like they were. I want my room back.
Mark my words. By the time he's 30, they'll be sniffing glue out of a plastic bag.
Thanks, Lillian. What did you want to say, Edward?
What do you want to say?
Now in his bedroom, Edward unpacks his bag and traipses out of the house past his dad, who's fixing the front door with a hammer.
Oh, where are you off to with a grump on? Go on, get yourself off to school. Tell Mr. Kelly you had to go to the dentist.
Idiots. Cow.
He passes Clarence's van on the driveway.
Wankerer.
Noticing a hose pipe leading into the front window of the van, Edward pauses, then returns to the vehicle. Clarence is bent over the steering wheel in a cloud of exhaust fumes. Lillian and Edward watch the body being loaded into an ambulance.
Easy way out. Coward's way out.
Just, you know, a cry for help, that's all. Classic.
A what?
Never mind figures. Don't say that's all, Steve.
How can we let him get to that, poor fella? We'll have to cheer this place up a bit.
In Clarence's room, Edward discovers some of the magician's old publicity material. Among the memorabilia is a portrait photo of a glamorous woman. Kath watches her son from the doorway.
I'm very sorry for smacking you. You all right? Come here. You're very fortunate, you know. I never met my grandparents. And my mummy and daddy. Too far away for us to see them much. You've got all these old people around. With all these amazing stories. It's a privilege.
Edward casts his head down.
At least I think it is. Do you?
He shrugs.
Don't be scared of death, love. It's all right to be sad. There's no point being scared.
I'm not scared. I just want to know what happens.
A new day, and Edward is carrying a bin bag into a hospital ward. He reaches Clarence's bedside and accidentally spills some oranges onto the floor. Clarence jolts up from his sleep.
Nurse!
I thought you might have won your stuff.
Draw that curtain round. And give me my left shoe.
Now propped up in bed, Clarence flicks cigar ash into his shoe.
Did you want one?
No. Ta.
Following a nurse's scornful glare, they sit on a bench outside. Clarence empties his shoe.
Sorry for setting the fire bell off. Sorry I put a lot of talcum on the floor and that. Sorry for not saying sorry when you ran me over. And that time I took dirt on your head.
That's an awful lot of things to be sorry for. At such a young age.
Sorry. Are you a magician?
I gave it up.
Why don't you start again?
Do me a favour.
When you did, you see any kind of bright white light or a tunnel with Jesus at the end?
As a matter of fact, I did. And then this cross-eyed little Herbert turned up and yanked me back out. That's what you should be saying sorry for.
The communal lounge back at home.
That certain night, then
Upstairs, Clarence unpacks his clothes from the bin bag. He searches the wardrobe.
Can someone inform me what the hell you think you're playing at? I'm stuck up here on my own with nothing to keep my trousers up with.
He sees one of his ties on the landing floor and Edward's door closing.
Welcome home.
Clarence notices an open drawer. Holding up his trousers, Clarence shuffles across and reopens the drawer. He pulls out a handful of ties and belts.
You know, if I want to top myself, I'm going to jump out the window.
Back in his bedroom, Clarence's head turns to follow the path of Edward's footsteps outside. He goes over to the window and mouths the words "bugger off" down to the boy. In the lounge, a senile Prudence pops bubble wrap, much to the annoyance of Lillian, who's trying to watch the film.
I don't deserve that, Sylvia. What I deserve is crippled legs.
Later, as Reg sleeps off a brandy downstairs, Clarence lies flat on his back in bed, his eyes heavy with tears. Looking up, he watches some booklets slide under the door into his bedroom. Clarence steals a peek out into the corridor, where Edward is peering out of his room expectantly. Now, in bed again, Clarence shuffles through the pamphlets, covering topics such as coping with memory loss and bereavement. Casting the pamphlets aside, he gets up and scoops more of his belongings into the bin bag. The next day, Steve is greeted by his wife in the hallway. He has a mullet haircut.
How much did that cost?
You can't put a price on looking good, chuckle bum.
How much is looking stupid?
Tanya passes by.
Nice do, Stevie.
Kath shakes her head and goes off. Steve's gaze follows Tanya. And he sighs. Tape recordings in hand, Edward bumps into Clarence on the landing.
You want to watch where you're going?
Entering Edward's room, Clarence spots some drawings and photos pinned to a notice board.
This your grand passion?
Yeah. But I'm not supposed to. They're all pictures of ghosts. When I took that, there was no one there.
Apart from that bloke.
Clarence points to an indistinct figure in the photo. Outside, Kath is chasing a naked pensioner. She wraps a quilt around him.
What's his problem?
Who?
Flash Gordon.
They look out the window onto the scene below.
He was in a war.
Huh. What about the others?
Lillian's a bit miserable. She trumps a lot. Reg gets drunk. Elsie used to be a dancing teacher, but now she's got a plastic leg. Prudence tears up toilet paper. Ina thinks she's still the king's housemaid, and she can't stop stealing stuff. Clive's had a stroke, so the only thing he can say is one out.
Rage. Rage against the dying and the alive.
The wheels on the bus go round and round, round and round. Wheels on the bus go round and round all day long.
Clarence passes by the lounge.
The dogs on the bus go woof, woof, woof. Woof, 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 woof. The dogs on the bus go woof, woof, woof.
Jesus Christ almighty.
Edward joins Clarence in the adjacent room.
The babies on the bus go wah, wah, wah. Wah, 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 wah.
I can't put the two things together. Lived on my own. Well, by myself and the missus. You live on your own all your life, and then they think it's a great idea to shove you together with a load of strangers.
And what do the mummies on the bus say? Anyone?
Screw this, if they've got any sense.
Is everybody all right?
Yes, thank you.
Nice to see you, Clarence.
He nods dejectedly.
Oh, God.
I know someone that'll cheer you up.
A cemetery.
You've got to be bleeding kidding.
Have one of your beers. I want to show you something. Are you interested in ghosts?
No, not in the slightest.
I am.
So I gathered.
I'm trying to catch him on tape.
Where are you going? There's nothing in it, you know. It's all a lot of bollocks.
No, it's not.
It is.
Samuel Pete. Not dead. Only sleeping.
He's going to be pissed off when he wakes up.
Clarence sits down on a flat stone sarcophagus.
He's going to bring my piles down.
I need a coin.
Fishing in his pocket, Clarence hands over a coin. Edward places it on a headstone.
Now, you'll have to dance around it 100 times. The hand comes out and you can ask it questions. Come on.
He starts prancing around the grave.
1, 2.
98. What's happening?
Nothing much.
99.
100.
A sudden gust of wind blows Clarence's hat off. They stare at each other.
I mean, there's lots of different ways to contact them. Seances and Ouija boards. And, like, you can stand in front of a mirror, right? And say someone's name again and again and again, and then they'll appear.
Does this apply to anyone?
No, you have to be dead.
Returning home, Clarence glances thoughtfully towards his camper van and lifts its window open. He stares at a photo of a woman with a 1950s bouffant hairstyle. She's wearing glasses.
Is that your wife? She looks like Dame Edna.
Shut up.
And now it's good night from me, and it's good night from him. Good night, good night, good night.
Good night.
Good night, sweet ladies. Thanks for the mystery tour. I'm not that bothered in the future.
My name's Edward.
Mine's Clarence.
He trudges upstairs. Later that evening, Elsie hobbles over to her bed and draws out a box from underneath. She pulls out a pair of dancing shoes and unwraps them both. Putting one on, she looks wistfully down at her foot. She sighs deeply, then bites her lip. Elsie closes her eyes tight for a moment before removing the shoe again. A desk lamp illuminates the corner of Clarence's bedroom. In the half-light, he inspects himself in the wardrobe mirror. He switches the light off. Standing upright in the darkened room, Clarence addresses his reflection in the mirror.
Annie? Annie? Annie.
trace of moonlight from the attic window falls onto the wedding photos by his bedside. Downstairs, in the kitchen, Steve is rolling a cigarette.
Right, I'm knocking off.
That's a good idea.
I'm off down the ship.
What?
Do you mind if I get changing it?
He briefly steals a glance at her changing the other side of the frosted glass, then looks away again and lights his cigarette. Standing with his back to the door, he gulps.
Did you see Top of the Pops last night?
Oh, no, I don't watch it. Who was on?
No, I don't watch it neither.
No.
You still with Mike, or...?
Oh, no. I packed him in. I mean, we're both going away soon, so...
University.
That's it.
Wish I'd gone sometimes. Failed me geography A-level. Didn't realise there was another question on the back of the page. I finished half an hour before everybody else, and I'm sitting there thinking, God, they're all a bit bloody slow.
She wipes her lipstick coyly.
Do you want a lift or anything?
Yeah. Like.
Great. I'll just get me jacket off.
Upstairs, he smacks on some aftershave, wipes his moustache, and unwraps a new jacket. Hastily checking himself in the mirror, Steve decides to roll up the sleeves before leaving. Tanya is waiting by the car.
Oh, you smell like a tart window box, Steve. What have you got on?
Oh, just something I bought for Christmas, you know.
Clarence listens to the recordings.
This is what I've got to look forward to, is it? Can't you find something more constructive to do? Learn a skill?
I only want to know what happens.
What happens is you think the last thought you're ever going to think, and then whatever it was that used to be you just goes. Christ, it would be lovely. I've got lots of things I'd like to say. But the curtain's come down, unfortunately.
That's horrible. It can't just be black. Don't take the piss.
Edward storms off, leaving a roomy-eyed Clarence alone. He exhales a puff of cigar smoke. Still slightly dishevelled, Clarence is waiting outside the school gates. A mother approaches him.
Are you waiting for someone?
Yes, little lad.
Your grandson, is he?
No. Just a little lad.
Edward spots him from the school steps, but as he crosses the playground, another pupil slips the bag off Edward's shoulder.
Dear Lord.
Clarence stares open-mouthed as the boys tease Edward.
You don't have to come and get me.
Some boys are playing football on the beach.
Do you want a game? It's nice weather for one.
I don't like football.
I was wondering if you might accompany me on an expedition.
They continue strolling along side by side. Back at home, they throw open the cellar door. Edward flicks the light switch.
The bulb's broken.
Doesn't matter. Darker the better.
Clarence produces a torch and they go down the steps. A table is set up in the darkened room.
For those of you who have never before sat in a séance, there is absolutely nothing to be fearful of. Ghosts are very friendly sorts. They like a nice chinwag, but they're very scared of loud noises. Sudden movements. which is the reason why they are very rarely to be sighted in discos and wrestling matches, for example.
You shouldn't joke. It'll make them vengeful.
Spirits, please accept my mortal apologies.
Edward starts the tape recorder.
Now, who are we hoping to contact tonight?
Anyone.
Okay, we'll try for anyone. Is there anybody there? Is there anybody there? Is there anybody there? Is someone in here? Who is it?
Arnold? Someone else? Who?
It's yes or no questions only, I think.
Is there life after death? What's it like?
Is it nice?
Are there any ghosts in this house?
Are there any nice ghosts in this house that don't want to scare anyone or cause any bother or nothing?
Much to Clarence's delight, Edward's face is wide open in wonder. Back in his bedroom, Edward enters today's report into his logbook in block capitals. A manifestation. Next morning, Edward's face stirs from under the blankets.
Happy birthday, dear Edward. Happy birthday to you.
Good morning.
Steve wanders over to the window as Edward tears into his present. Parting the curtains, he spies on Tanya kissing her boyfriend goodbye.
I'm going to have a shave.
Have a kiss, please. Thank you.
Lillian brings a gift wrap box into the kitchen.
It's a special and glorious day today.
Yeah.
Canada's a country. And my big, god-bothering girl, Mavis, is coming from there to see me today with a husband who's got a plate in his head. Of course, she's not a girl now, little man. She's 66 years old.
I'm 11.
Well, she's six times better than you are, isn't she?
She exits, carrying the gift back out with her. Kath, startled by the sound, heads off after Lillian.
Steve! Come here!
Feeling for Lillian's pulse, she shakes her head at Steve.
Oh, fantastic.
A taxi pulls up outside and they hastily drag the corpse to the stairlift. Ina obliges in a fluster.
Who do you think you are, then? Lord and Lady Aggleshite? Tradesman's entrance. But shake a leg.
Oh, happy birthday, mate.
Back to your room, quick, smart. Is she dead?
No, she's fine, she's fine.
The visiting relatives look up at the rumbling upstairs.
What's all the fuss about?
She's had it. She's only just died.
Now, stop that. Stop what you're doing.
He enters Lillian's room with his recording equipment and holds out the microphone to catch her last gasps.
She's just in her room.
Kath shows Lillian's daughter and son-in-law upstairs. Edward hears them approach the room. The woman's attention is caught by a boy's leg receding under the bed. Kath sighs in despair.
Eddie, I'm worried this is how the Yorkshire Ripper must have started.
Oh, Steve, he's not going to end up like the Yorkshire Ripper. Well,
what's wrong with playing with your Lego, eh? Why are you so bloody morbid?
Because I live here.
We are doing our best.
We used to go away for the day on my birthday.
Already?
That doesn't entitle you to do whatever you bloody like.
Clarence joins Edward, who's sitting outside on the flat, rain-washed rooftop.
I heard Lillian's ghost. It went... I was too thick to turn the tape on.
Yeah, that's the sound it makes. It's the air passing over the vocal cords as it comes out of the lungs.
No, it's not. Can we do another seance?
The proper reaction is to mourn and to celebrate their achievements as human beings and then try to move on. Not stick a microphone up their nose.
I used to have a room with Paddington Bear wallpaper.
Yeah, well, I used to have a beautiful wife and all my own teeth. Your life changes, Buster. And not always for the better. You accumulate regrets and they stick to you like old bruises.
Edward grimaces.
Sorry.
Clarence lifts back his lapel and a card magically rises from his top pocket.
Many happy returns of the day. I'll teach you a few tricks. I'll do you a magic show. And you can rub out all of today. And you can ask your pals.
I don't want to party.
Join hands and make contact with the living, son. You gotta keep it hidden, you see? Keep it in the knuckles. Go on.
Edward's hand struggles to manipulate the playing card.
You're lucky, you're still flexible. Go on. Now make it disappear. Go on.
He drops the card and holds up his hands.
Start again.
Kath is on the phone in the lounge.
It doesn't start until September, does it?
I'll have you know.
Tanya.
Clarence and Edward come through.
God almighty. Whole bunch of pricks. Go on, ask him. Ask him about your party.
Oh.
After who?
I don't understand. It doesn't take 5 months to pack.
Tragic, isn't it?
Clarence consoles the relatives.
What were her achievements then? What was she like?
She was a manipulative, passive-aggressive, unkind old asshole.
His wife, Lillian's daughter, sobs. Clarence looks at the others assembled in the lounge, but no one speaks. He turns instead to the piano.
Wish me luck as you bade me goodbye. Cheerio, here I go on my way.
Tanya's resigned. Can you believe that?
She's what?
He'll have a birthday party, Mum. I know it was a prick. Why did you pick up language like that?
Did she give any details?
I want a magic show.
Eddie, you were a naughty boy.
Well, go on.
Hello, details.
Mum! Eddie, will you just get off our backs for 1 minute? We've got this bloody wait going on, that's enough to deal with.
Till we meet once again, you and Donna. Wish me luck.
Elsie approaches Reg.
Maybe we should have a wee dance?
The dancers have all gone under the hill, my dear.
With the chin, not a...
In the kitchen, a clean-shaven Steve listens to Kath and Edward.
Go on, then. Do you good to have some other kids around?
She must have said something about why.
I don't know what you're so upset about. It's me you'll cop for the extra work.
Oh, yeah. Because I do sod all around here, don't I? You know, sometimes I wish we did go bloody bankrupt.
Till we meet once again.
Steve leaves Kath in the kitchen alone. In the hallway, he rips off his tie and loosens his collar.
Bye. Find a lady. Five will get you 10, 10 will get you 20. Put your money in. Where is it?
Thanks for the ride.
No, there she is. It's not so bad here, is it?
No.
And the vicar says...
Reg leans in towards the priest.
Madam, this is a lady's bike. It doesn't have a crossbar.
He nods uncomfortably to Reg.
You see, she's thought she was sitting on the crossbar all the way from Keithley. But it was his stiffy.
Yeah.
Everyone all right?
Yeah.
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 Fucking Christians.
Clarence and Edward in the post office.
You use two panes with very polished glass for Pepper's Ghost at an angle like that. Mm-hmm. Annie lies there. Well, assistant.
You've had this.
What?
You've already had this week's, buddy. It's only Tuesday.
I do not believe that I have already had this week's.
Don't you?
No, Sunshine, I don't.
He points at the pension book stamp.
Ding, 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 ding,
bugger off.
It can just be very small, Scout. It could just be me and you.
What could?
My birthday party.
I have been trying to draw you out of yourself for a bit, in case you hadn't twigged on. God, what's the worst that could happen? Kids eat some cake. We lift the grim, bloody pallor of mortality for a few glorious moments.
He waves some invites.
OK, this one.
Swapping football cards in the playground.
Got. Need. Oi. What? We got PA.
Cosmo. Spastic.
The boys shut Edward out.
Hey.
A party invitation rises out of Edward's top pocket.
Shit.
In the canteen, Edward high shuffles a deck of cards. Flames burst magically from his hand and everyone is agasp.
The light is on! The light is on!
The light reads silent eating.
You've got to flex it between your knuckles. Don't drop it. Flex it in your whatnots.
Clarence works on his van's engine.
You've got to practice, you know.
Edward peers under the bonnet too.
You've been practising. Give us your watches. Do, darling.
You're not going to leave, are you? Why do you write so much on your arms?
Shall we go and get some magical items for your party?
Don't jump off the roof, Dad. You'll make a big hole in the yard. I'm just starting to chew. The weeding and seeding was hard. If you must end it all, Dad, why don't you give us a break? Take a walk in the park, Dad, and there you can jump in the lake.
Oops-a-daisy. This is where we are, then. Find some items to make your party go with a swing.
They enter an old lock-up.
Funny. You spend your life accumulating stuff and then you can't find anywhere to put it. Imagine that. Imagine all the money I've spent. All the bloody work I've done.
The room is filled with costumes and props. Clarence selects a cloak and drapes it over Edward's shoulders. He sets a top hat on his young friend's head.
I had a fine woman, you know. She's very artistic. Very gentle.
He looks at a woman's dress on a hanger.
We were very happy.
What's this do?
Tells the time.
Is it magic?
No, it's a grandfather clock. You've got to give them the patter. Otherwise, they'll latch onto you.
What's patter?
She was very good at that as well. She used to help me write my little funny lines, of course. I met her at Euston Station. Well, I saw her. She passed me by. I went after her. I had a 10-bob note in my pocket. You don't see them anymore. They were red. So I took it out and I said, "Excuse my intrusion, miss, but I think you might have dropped this." And she said, "Oh, gosh, I did. Thank you." So I took her to Lion's Corner House. We had a long bun, as it were. And that, as they say, was that.
Edward pulls back a dust sheet. Emblazoned on the cabinet door are the words, "Disappearing woman."
Oh, God.
Clarence's eyes well up with tears and his lip quivers.
That was the faintest idea, weren't they, Scrapton? Tanners, Florence, Shillings. You don't know what change you're getting nowadays.
He fumbles at the dashboard and the van veers across the road.
Clarence?
Hannah.
What?
Misdirection.
A shaken Clarence stumbles out of the van and is met by an astonished driver.
Sorry,
don't jump off the road.
I'm sorry.
You'll make it to the yard.
You shouldn't be driving, pal.
You okay?
He buries his face in his hands.
When I was a nipper, I remember looking up, lying on my back, and looking up at the stars and thinking what a great big university it is.
Universe.
And all them stars, well, yeah. Now, they're very, very small. It's all shut up shop. And the stars, you know, they don't want them. And the whole bloody thing is ended up on little.
You can take it to a garage.
What?
They push the van along.
You see, then you die, then you come back to life. You know, actually, you're born again, then you die again, and afterwards, you come back to life.
Sounds exhausting.
They rest for a moment.
I want to come back as an animal. A rabbit or a badger or something. I like badgers.
What's so good about badgers?
Well, I like badgers because they're bad-tempered and they look good. And you can make sporrans out of badgers.
But if you came back as a person, you get a chance to put it right again.
Let me tell you a secret. Being a person is a pain in the arse.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is.
Clarence?
What?
If you die, will you come back and see me?
Jesus wept. Chuck that thing away. Chuck it away! Chuck my bloody
tricks
away!
Clarence pushes the van with renewed vigour. Edward watches as the old man steers it into the sea.
What did you do that for?
I'm pissing against the wind. I'm drenching my Macintosh. You don't come back, son. Once they've gone, you can't talk to them. If I could just say to her, I'm sorry, if I could tell her I was bloody sorry, what a difference that would make. She's dead, son. She divorced me.
Who?
Annie. I wouldn't settle down. I couldn't keep it in my trousers. You know what I mean? I was a good-looking fella. Then one day I came back home and she... Many years later, I got a letter saying that she... I was too late for a bloody funeral. I've never even seen her grave. It's hard to get this far and realise there's absolutely bloody nothing.
You said you were happy.
Who's happy?
We could do another seance.
Don't be retarded. I made it up. I did it all for your benefit.
What?
Oh, shut up. I want to be by myself.
Cut your own stuff up.
I will.
Edward casts the magician's proper side.
Badgers are stupid.
Clarence looks out to the sea as Edward strides off. Elsie, Ina and Prudence are attended by a hairdresser in the lounge.
You getting your rabbit in your hat?
No, I'm shoving it up your bum.
He goes upstairs and retrieves the tape recorder from under his bed.
Makes you think, doesn't it?
I wasn't really thinking about anything very much. I was thinking about having my dinner.
No, I mean about life being too short, all that balls.
It's my Steve.
Kath and I know we used to have an awful lot of fun. It seems to escape you.
Don't go to university. Hey, stay here. We could date.
Whoa, what?
Do you think I'm attractive?
Hold your horses, Stevie. I'm 18 years old.
I know, it's fantastic.
Yeah, and what are you, like 45?
No, I'm 39.
Going on bloody geriatric.
Kidder? I'm thinking of doing the card-finding duck.
Go away!
It takes two people.
Tough titty! Any bloody magic.
Clarence walks off with the prop in his hands. A new day. Edward, at his school desk, stares blankly out of the classroom window.
Right, Ranjit, when the previous book was called John, has got 6 marbles. Zulima, who used to be Samantha, has got 12. And Keith, thank goodness, has got 4. What percentage of the bag does each one have? 5 minutes.
Guests arrive for the party in fancy dress.
Have some manners.
What is the North Dog's horror?
God, what's that smell? Ugh, it's wee! No wonder he's a complete weirdo.
Edward descends on the stairlift wearing a ghost costume.
Moving without a break since 1917. I can't do anything else.
Elsie sups a glass of punch, then goes over to Reg, who's blacked up as a minstrel.
Get up, you. Reg the hare. Get up. Get up!
He gets up. Elsie slips his arm around her waist and they dance. Edward watches the party from the doorway and goes upstairs. Bleary-eyed, Clarence sits in his room alone. He animates the fingers of his right hand as though performing a card trick. Edward enters the room. Clarence looks up, a sunken heap sitting in a dark corner.
Can you do your magic, Shaw?
What? You sure?
Now dressed in a tangerine frill shirt with a brown bow tie, Clarence puts on a chocolate-coloured jacket with silk lapels. He picks up a top hat and sets it on Edward's head. They hold a pose together in the dressing mirror. Clarence fans a deck of cards out in one hand, then tucks them into his jacket pocket.
You got any kids?
Clarence shakes his head.
Now then, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, please put your hands together for the amazing Clarence!
I'm not the sort of magician who drags you through endless mysteries. I'm pretty straightforward.
He balances a top hat on his cane like a bucket.
And I don't do card tricks.
He drops some cards into the hat. They spurt out again like a fountain.
Well, maybe one or two. Would you take the card for me, please? Any card.
Clive's card is the Four of Spades.
Don't tell me what it is. No, don't tell me. Put it back. I have a friend who will do that for me. Ronald the card-finding duck. He is going to find your card for you.
The mechanical duck dips into the pack and retrieves the Four of Spades in its bill.
Can I have another brave volunteer, please? Hey.
The residents exchange anxious glances. Clarence selects the old soldier, whose hands jitter in alarm.
No, absolutely not. They sit knitting and eating frogs and watching people having their heads cut off.
With great aplomb, he unveils a mini guillotine. Clarence points to his breast pocket and a carrot rises out of it. He places the carrot into the guillotine.
Unfortunately, they found that the guillotine was susceptible to the power of raspberries.
Flipping a switch, he takes the man's finger.
If you've got enough people to blow raspberries, the blade would be diverted from its fatal course, which is why I need your help. Okay, let's have a dry run.
The old soldier's finger protrudes from the guillotine. Clarence flips the switch a second time and raises the blade.
Okay. I think we're ready. Blow.
The old soldier is stretchered into an ambulance and Kath passes the crew a small package.
I've wrapped it in a bag of pills.
Oh, no.
Any other medication?
Yes, I'm on pills for me.
He looks down at his now steady hands.
Well, that'd be good.
Edward inserts breadsticks into the guillotine.
Don't put your finger in it.
He lets a blade drop onto his finger. Clive passes by the lounge.
One out.
Steve emerges from the kitchen holding a slice of cake with a candle and places it on the table. Edward ignores the gesture.
You ready? It's
I'm crusty.
Go on, may I have some, eh? Get this candle lit.
I don't want any.
Have some cake.
He chases after Edward.
What's the matter?
I live in an old people's home!
Yeah, well, I live in an old people's home as well. It's not easy for anybody. You realise this will now be the place you send your elderly loved ones for bits of them chopped off, don't you?
It was an accident!
Where do you get off sticking up for him all the time? He's not your granddad, is he?
I wish it was my dad!
All right, well, he's going senile. Haven't you noticed? So you'll just have to settle for Mr. Knobhead here.
Eddie, go! Some people don't die just like that, you know. Not like Lillian. Some people, they take a bit longer, you know, they fade.
I know what senile is!
They're still Daddy and me, love. We are not going to fade away.
Yes, you are! You are!
Look, they're just clients. You shouldn't get so involved.
What about you?
What?
Getting involved!
Edward goes over to the tape recorder. Flinches.
I do.
She swallows and looks away. Rising from the bed, she walks out of the room, avoiding her husband's eyes. Edward sits by Clarence's bedside.
I have never been unfaithful to you. Not in 15 years!
You just undermine me, Steve. All the time, you never do anything other than complain.
It's exhausting. Why don't you just go?
Oh, come on.
I'm sick of it. Go.
Bag in hand, Steve trudges across to the car. Motionless, Edward watches his father leave. Though his lips are pressed tightly together, his mouth quivers slightly. Spring flowers are growing in the garden. Elsie presents a hand-picked posy to Reg.
There. Oh. Oh, you look nice in that tie, Reggie.
Thank you.
But you never have it quite straight, do you?
No, no.
We've got to straighten you out a bit in general, haven't we?
Oh, yes. I suppose so, yes.
Come along.
She guides him back to the house. Kath is carrying a tray upstairs.
It's 8:30, love. Come on, get up. I want to talk.
She waits briefly outside Edward's room, then crosses the corridor to Clarence's room. His bed is empty. Kath checks Edward's room. It too is empty.
Edward!
She runs downstairs.
Eddie!
In the kitchen, the medicine cabinet is wide open. At school, Edward's desk is vacant.
On Sunday, we went to Edward's birthday party. There were a wizard who cut an old man's finger off. It was extremely wicked.
Clarence and Edward stand at a bus stop on the seafront.
An old person and a young person, please.
180.
Edward pulls out a roll of banknotes.
That's a lot of ready cash.
He's my granddad.
Oh, are you?
Well, possibly. There have been many women.
Later, the twosome enter a train station.
When are we going home, then? Come on. I want to be where my stuff is.
Edward looks up at his friend, then runs off urgently with his bag.
Come here! Boy, come here! Come here!
He catches up with Edward on the train.
That was a cheap bloody trick. Pull the red whatchamacallit.
Too late, we're going.
Pull the whatchamacallit.
I'll pull it if you tell me what it's called.
Well, I know it's red.
They make their way along a country lane.
What's a divorce like?
What?
A divorce.
Bit tricky, I should think.
Clarence dodders on his feet.
Come on.
Is it still there?
What?
Is it?
What's the matter?
Is the ground still there?
Look! Ground! Guy, ground!
He stamps.
Ow! Oi!
Concentrate!
Any danger of a cup of tea and a pork pie? You're not really upset.
Edward pulls out a bunch of flowers from his bag.
Thank you.
Stay here.
My name is Clarence Parkinson. And England is my nation. My teacher's name is Mr. Scott, and Christ is my salvation.
Clarence! Come here!
He waves back to Clarence from the far corner of the cemetery. Confused, Clarence points at a gravestone.
That's the same name as my missus.
I know.
Edward shows him a printed service sheet from Annie Parkinson's funeral.
Oh. No. Oh, God. Shut up. Shut up. Shut up. Oh.
He fumbles distractedly with the flowers in his hand.
Put them down, then. Put them down. Get it off your... Don't! Don't! You've spoilt them.
Yeah. I've spoilt all these nice flowers, haven't
I? It's all right.
Edward takes the remaining stems from his hand and places them on the grave.
You know what they're going to say on my gravestone? Here lies Clarence B. Parkinson. He was born, he effed it up, and then he died. What's your name? Eh?
Edward.
Edward? Things aren't exactly as they ought to be. Have you any idea what it is? Something matter. The name on that gravestone is the same name as my wife.
Edward's face is crestfallen.
Leave it. I'm gonna go call my mom.
In the car, Kath stares ahead impassively as Steve talks.
You know, today's the first time we've spent more than half an hour with each other without a bloody fogey or shitty arse or liquidised bloody carrots getting in the way. For a year. Because our kids run off because he hates us so much because of what we do.
Listen. What we do is good. We didn't go to university, Steve. You asked me to marry you. We had a baby. Do you remember how much... Do you remember how hard we tried for him?
Yeah.
That was the journey we decided to make. And there might be a few less dates. And I might end up looking like my mother, but...
I'm sorry.
She wipes a tear from her eye. Later, at a roadside cafe, she guides Clarence towards the men's toilet. Steve sits opposite Edward.
I mean, you argue with your mate sometimes, right? And obviously your mum and me sometimes. I can be a grumpy bum. It's no fault of yours, love. It's just...
You're not going to live at home?
I don't know. Hey, but you must never think, ever, that you're not absolutely the most important thing in the world to your mum and me. Do you understand?
Edward nods and looks down, avoiding his father's eyes. Clarence is asleep in the car.
When's he going to die?
You look after him. Just let me look after everybody. I'm a little bit bored with you men and your problems at the moment, Edward. Sometimes you just have to learn to let things go.
I know.
Where have you been?
Go back to sleep.
I've been looking for you all over the damn place.
Oh, God help us, there's another one here, another wild and woolly one who can't cope with himself.
Ellie. I'm sorry, Pitchin. That's all I wanted to say. I just tell you that I'm sorry. I got distracted. Look, if I had my time over again, if I had it again... Annie.
I forgive you. I forgive
you. Clarence leans across and kisses her tenderly. He rests his head on her shoulder and she comforts him. In a cinema, Steve and Edward are watching Back to the Future.
No, Marty, I'm going to be very sad to see you go. You've really made a difference in my life. You've given me something to shoot for. Just knowing that I'm going to be around to see 1985, that I'm going to succeed in this, that I'm going to have a chance to travel through time.
Steve gazes lovingly at his son.
It's going to be really hard waiting 30 years before I can talk to you about everything that's happened in the past few days. I'm really going to miss you, Marty.
I'm gonna miss
you. Ace one, wasn't it? That one was magic. Hey, did you like the bit with the skateboard?
I was there too.
Oh, no. You sure?
Yeah. You coming in?
Oh, a couple of minutes, Carter. Hey, you did like it though, didn't you?
It was good, Dad. Can I have a word?
Most assuredly.
Their smiles fade as they read Kath's face.
With him.
Her eyes address Edward with a sympathetic expression. Edward slowly enters Clarence's room, where the old man lies in bed. He approaches the bedside gingerly. Leaning over towards Clarence, he gently pokes the motionless face. Straightening up again, Edward collects his tape recorder from the bedside and leaves. Back in his room, Edward sits with his headphones on. A notice still attached to the tape recorder, which reads, "When you want to remember something, say it into this."
Getting to be spring outside again, isn't it?
It's October.
The leaves are looking very nice on the large plants you get in the garden.
Trees.
You're not doing that trick right.
You've got to give it some patter. Words. Why don't you just...
What do you call a man with a paper bag in his head? Russell. What do you call a man with a licence plate in his head? Reg. What do you call a man with a car in his head?
Seatbelt.
Edward flips the card and it disappears.
Good lad.
Can I have my fiver now?
You what?
You said you'd give me a fiver if I got it right.
What a load of bollocks. Come in.
Ready for the off?
Where are we going?
Pictures.
Ta-ta for now.
Grinning at Clarence, Edward performs the card trick again as he leaves. Clarence smiles weakly and sits motionless. Edward, in his room, sobs gently. He lays the headphones down.
I was wondering whether you wanted to move back into your old room.
I'm okay where I am.
He was some magician, wasn't he?
She goes over to Edward and cuddles him. A spring day, and Edward is playing football with a friend outside. Clive is sitting on a bench nearby.
Oh, yeah. He shoots! He scores!
The ball rolls over towards the elderly man.
Come on, then. Pass it!
Startled, Clive looks over to Edward. He gets up and raises a questioning eyebrow at Edward, who gives an encouraging nod in return. The three of them tumble over each other as they kick the ball around.
Nice one, old man.
Edward runs off in pursuit of the ball. He finds the ball lying in some overgrowth, but his eye is caught by a movement amongst the trees. Badger scurries away in front of him.
One out!
Back indoors, Edward performs magic tricks to Prudence. He stuffs an orange handkerchief into a clenched fist, brings out a stem, and forces the tip of it into his closed hand, revealing a red rose.
Oh, look! Abracadabra!
Delighted, Prudence draws the rose close to her and sniffs it. Kath is adding some finishing touches to her makeup.
Where are you going?
She looks over to him, standing at her bedroom door.
Out. That's all. You never go out. Well, things are different now, aren't they? Why'd you have to put makeup on? Because... oh, I don't know. Makes you feel a bit more human. You look like a vampire. Cheers, big ears.
Her lipstick leaves a smear on his cheek. From the foot of the stairs, he watches her open the door to Steve. Smiling, Kath looks back behind her at Edward, who exchanges a wink with his dad. Edward takes a seat on the stairlift, and a smile plays on his face as he ascends. Is Anybody There? Was directed by John Crowley. The producers were David Heyman, Mark Turtletaub, and Peter Saraf. The screenplay was written by Peter Harness, and the director of photography was Rob Hardy. The editing was by Trevor Waite, and the music by Joby Talbot. The cast included Bill Milner as Edward and Michael Caine as Clarence. Anne-Marie Duff was Kath, with David Morrissey as Steve, and Lindsay Cocker playing Tanya. The residents were played by Elizabeth Spriggs, Leslie Phillips, Sylvia Sims, Thelma Barlow, Peter Vaughan, Ralph Riash, and Sylvia Sims. Thank you.